The Environmental Protection Agency is bracing for major changes under the new administration of President Trump. During the campaign, Trump said he wanted to eliminate the EPA entirely. He has since backed off that proposal, but has repeatedly called for severe cuts to environmental regulations. For more on the EPA transition, we're joined by Christy Todd Whitman, president of the Whitman Strategy Group. She's a Republican, former governor of New Jersey, and led the EPA from 2001 to 2003 under President George W. Bush. Governor Whitman, welcome.
It's a pleasure. Good to be with you.
So President Trump has frozen all new regulations, including some EPA rules that were scheduled to go into effect before March. He's also said now, with an executive order signed yesterday, that there will have to be a repeal of two regulations for every new one proposed. How do you see that affecting the work of the EPA?
Well, frankly, the freezing isn't a surprise. You always want to put a hold on the things that are moving that the last administration pushed out at the very end, what they always called, everybody called the ugly babies. And you need to make sure that those comport with how you want to do business. It's the two-for-one that bothers me the most. I mean, it's one thing to say, look, we need to scrub our regulations. We need to make sure that those that we have in place are doing the job they're supposed to do, that they haven't outlived their usefulness, that they are not holding back our ability to grow as a country economically. But two-for-one just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because they're just not a bucket somewhere sitting with useless regulations. When their regulations are enacted, it is either usually because of a lawsuit that require that those steps be taken, a finding by a court that there is an endangerment finding, that there is a problem that is problematic for human health or the environment, or that science has discovered, as they have done more and more work, that these things are bad for human health and the environment. And what you don't want to do is to say, well, we're just going to not move forward with any new regulations because we can't find a regulation that we think is irrelevant.
Well, and the term regulations is so abstract. I mean, give us an example of a regulation at the EPA while you were there or now, and how it actually plays out.
Well, I mean, for instance, when I was there, a holdover regulation from the Clinton administration was to greatly reduce the carbon emissions from diesel engines on cars, which I took a look at and said, yes, no, this is important because diesel is polluting and it is bad for human health. But then the scientist said to me, look, what's even more polluting are the non-road diesel engines, tractors, backhoes, that kind of thing. People said, you can't do that. That is going after the Republican base. It's labor, too. It's work. It's everything. And a number of the members on the Hill said there isn't a company that can actually produce an engine that reduces the emissions the way you want to. And frankly, we did a little more work and found a major company that said, yes, we can do this. And we did it. And the regulation is now in place. And diesel emissions have been reduced by over 95%. It took work. There is always pushback. But if you look at what the impact is for human health, when you consider that for the most recent year for which we have the full data, which is 2013, 91,000 people in this country died because of dirty airborne related diseases. That's almost three times as many people as died on the road that year. This is an issue. This is a serious problem for human health. And you don't want to stop pursuing the healthiest course. Again, we have proven over time that we can do this and keep our economy going, and you don't want to just have a blanket sort of mindless stop.
So how do you think the EPA became such an enemy, especially of many Republicans?
Because it's easy to hate. A regulation usually requires people to spend money or change behavior on a problem they may not see. For instance, when we were working on water and trying to ensure that we had clean drinking water, you had ranchers who were running their cattle right into the stream or dumping their manure right close to a stream, which wasn't a problem for them. Their water was good. But downstream, it became a real problem. And you had municipal utilities downstream that were going to have to spend, or private utilities, that were going to have to spend literally thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get to the clean water standards. What we said is, look, if you pay a couple of thousand dollars to the rancher to help him find a different way to handle his manure, as long as you get the water to the standard that's safe for people to consume, who cares how you do it? And this is a much less expensive way, so neither you nor your ratepayers have to pay that extra money. So you can be creative. You can make it happen.
So what do you say to people who say that maybe these regulations should be left to the states, that there's no need for the federal government to step in and do this.
Well, as in the example with water, it runs downhill and it doesn't stop at your place and your boundary line or your state line. The same with air. Mother Nature never really cared a whole lot for geopolitical boundaries. So this is where the role of the federal government, to my mind, is to set the floor as to what is the basic standard for safety for human health and the environment. If a state wants to be more proactive, if the state wants to raise that standard, make it even higher, make it more protective, let them have it. Let them do it. If you believe in states' rights, that's where they come in. But you cannot say that water or air stop at a state's boundaries. They don't. And so you've got to undertake and understand the impact amongst the other states. And there are many instances on the Chesapeake Bay, for instance, the states involved tried for years to come together on their own to figure out how to stop the effluent, which was killing the shell beds for oysters and for clams. And so they couldn't do it. And so the EPA had to step in, and they did. And now you're starting to see progress. It hasn't come back fully yet, but it's starting to come back. So there are instances where even when the states work together with the best of good faith, they can't reach an accommodation that'll solve the problem, and yet the problem needs to be solved.
Christy Todd Whitman, what do you think of Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General who President Trump has nominated to lead the EPA? He has described himself as a leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda.
Well, I mean, I don't know quite what to make of him. He certainly has sued the EPA on a number of occasions and actually lost most of them, but he's won a couple. And he was going after the endangerment finding on clean air on carbon as an attorney general, and yet in his confirmation hearings, he showed deference to the Supreme Court, which was nice of him, but he said he wouldn't revisit the endangerment finding. So he was sounding very balanced in his confirmation hearing. I don't know which is Scott Pruitt. And of course, at the end of the day, in all fairness to him, he serves at the pleasure of the president, and he does what the president will tell him to do. He's going to have to. He should give him his best advice. He should tell him when he thinks he's making a mistake, when an issue is more complicated or the fallout could be more serious than hasn't been anticipated by the administration. And I think we can see recently that sometimes they don't anticipate everything. After that, if the president still wants to do it a certain way, then he has to salute or else step aside.
And do you expect that one of the things that the president is going to want the EPA to do is cut its budget dramatically? We've heard Myron Ebel, who's been advising the transition when it comes to the EPA, talking about cutting $1 billion from the EPA's annual budget of roughly $8 billion and maybe even more than that.
I know. I've heard that. And, you know, what people ought to remember is they're cutting the budget of something that is an agency that's trying to clean up Superfund sites right now, that is trying to step in where they messed up, frankly, in Flint, Michigan, but to make it right. This is the agency that is going to ensure that we have clean air to breathe. The number one cause of missed school days in this country still is asthma. Hmm. We don't want to end up like a China. We don't want to end up with the days even Paris has had, or London recently, where people have to stay indoors because the air quality is so bad. These are not things that we want to see happen in this country, and EPA is the agency that is protecting us from those things.
So what would you advise people who are concerned about the things that you've brought up here today to do? Senators.
Well, I would advise senators to take a good hard look, to watch what's happening with the agency, to demand that they justify any new regulations that they want to undertake. And I don't disagree that the president has an absolute right to say, let's go back and look at every regulation. They should do that, but they should do it in a thoughtful way with an appreciation of the science behind it, because that's the key. At the end of the day, it's the science. Everything underpinning every regulation that EPA does is protection of the environment and human health. We'd rather err on the side of protecting the public than missing something. And when the misses happen, that's when you get a lot of bad publicity. And believe me, cutting the budget is not going to help with those misses.
That's Christy Todd Whitman, who was the administrator of the EPA from 2001 to 2003 under President George W. Bush, also former governor of New Jersey and now president of Whitman Strategy Group. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.